call, please, Stephanie. Thank you.
Tom Moore, Judy O'Connor, Joe Omosagie, Elaine Palencia,
here.
Kyle Patterson, Julian Rappaport,
here.
Jane Sprandl,
here.
Susan Fowler,
here.
Margaret White,
here.
Okay. And now there's time for citizen input and public participation. So do we have anyone who would like to give us some input? All right. Thank you. Next is the approval of our agenda. I guess we don't have quorum, but we'll have still. Okay. All right. Oh, okay. Thanks. All right. Approval of the agenda. May I have a motion, please?
I will second it.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
So my comments are, as we begin the fall, I want to thank our staff for all of their work throughout the summer and all of the time, and their continued help and support as I try to lead the Mental Health Board. And we have a very busy agenda tonight. So, Lynn, do you want to give your comments, please?
I think you've set it up really well for me to defer.
Oh, okay. All right.
Which I should do anyway.
All right. And new business, we will start with the UIUC, the Building Program Evaluation Capacity. And Drs. Nicole Allen and Mark Aber. And thank you. Your work is amazing. And I'm sorry, there are two other people. Chelsea and Markira Jones.
Yes, so Markira Jones.
Markira.
And Chelsea Birchmeyer, our research assistant.
All right, thank you. Sorry I didn't have that on my agenda.
No, not at
to
all.
Acknowledge you. Okay.
So my name is Nicole Allen. I want to just begin by thanking you all for having us. Oh, yes. Sorry. I will sit. I will use the mic. So my name is Nicole Allen. Mark Aber will not be here tonight. He had to travel unexpectedly for a family member. And so we are here. And what we want to do actually is just take you through briefly some information about the partnerships we did last year, but very briefly. And we want to share a little bit about a brief survey that we did based on our work to date, and then really just take your questions. So we're hoping we'll go through that rather quickly, and then are really just interested in expanding on anything that you want to learn more about. And I want to begin just by thanking you for the opportunity. We're really enjoying these partnerships, and it's just very exciting to take on this question about evaluation capacity building in funded agencies. And so it's been a really neat journey to be on and work that we're really enjoying with your funded agencies. So we had three partnerships in FY19, and you probably already know this because you saw the report, but our three targeted partners were Rattle the Stars, Community Service Center Resource Connection Program, and CUAP Truce. So these were our partners last year. And I'm going to say something very briefly about each one in terms of what we did with them. And if you have additional questions, we can go into more detail in the question and answer. But as you know, our goal in the targeted partnership is to work closely with the partner, with the agency, to design an evaluation that they can sustain on their own, that ideally allows them to implement that evaluation and use the data to inform their practice. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about this as we go on. So with Rattle the Stars, we developed a pre- and post-questionnaire to assess effectiveness around adolescent students' knowledge and skills. So Kim Bryan was interested not only in one population, so the adolescents here, but also the work that she does with adults. So we developed three sets of pre-post questionnaires to assess adults, including parents, school staff, and other professionals, suicide prevention knowledge and skills after participating in an adult version of the training. She's targeting multiple populations. And we also created, with Kim, a one-year follow-up survey for the adult participants to assess increases in responsiveness to and also their feelings of competence measured in multiple ways in intervening with individuals showing signs of suicidality. So that creates the opportunity to look not just post-training, but beyond that. With Community Service Center, We develop a needs assessment to assess and track clients' basic needs around food, healthcare, housing, clothing, and other needs, and also their new referrals to partner agencies in the community. We updated their annual survey and added evidence-based items to assess clients' food security, their well-being, perceptions of cultural competency, and satisfaction with services. One of the things I want to note about this, and that I really appreciated in the work that Markira and Chelsea did with each site, is also trying to build in with existing structures. And so in working with Andy and Karen, there was an effort to build in these sorts of questions into processes they already had in place with sustainability in mind, right? So sometimes forms just get added on. You all know this, right? And it's like there's the pink form and the blue form and the green form. And there's really an effort to say, what is it that you currently do? What questions are currently asked? How can those be turned into usable data? How can they be augmented around the sorts of questions that you have for your agency? We built relationships with co-located agencies to facilitate communication and the sharing of data to allow for a better referral system and also confirmation of the movement of referrals so that there's a way to say, like, you know, did this land? You make a referral, but was there follow-through on the referral? So there were some agreements made about data sharing. And then creating the infrastructure, so creating a spreadsheet for collecting, storing, and analyzing data, so having a mechanism. So we try to think through all of those pieces on the front end, and then ideally the targeted partner, so many of them are already underway with this, actually then implement and utilize these tools going forward. And with CUAP Truce, and you'll notice that every one of these is individualized because, as you know, the programs are all varied, and so the process is varied. So one of the things we did with them is develop an hours documentation tool which tracks staff's various activities, and this is particularly important in a service model like this, where there's so many different service activities. You know, it's one thing if you know, like, you have a billable hour or somebody comes into the office and you spend 50 minutes with them, but this is not the nature of this work. So this tool helped with staff accountability and also created an easy access database for people who are on the go, right? So they need to be able to log their time and the nature of their effort when they're not in an office, right? This is community-based work. We also developed an incident report and conflict mediation form. We actually modeled this after Cure Violence's form. We adapted it for this program. So Ceasefire in Chicago, we happen to have access to that form from previous work and utilized that form as a basis for creating something where the details of an incident intervention can be tracked. Again, these vary greatly, so it allows for that kind of real-time reflection on particular interventions. And some future directions is training new staff in the tracking tools and also working on creating individual treatment plan documents to strengthen intervention and also further aid in data monitoring. So what information they're going to get from clients on the front end when they're going to work with them in an ongoing way. And so we're hopeful that CUAP will continue to work with us to continue to build on some of the pieces that are still in process. So that's kind of a very brief overview. And you all know this from previous presentations, but what we do with each of these sites is we always begin with a logic model, and we've talked about that here before. So each site also ends up with a pictorial representation of their effort. And that's really what guides this work, because once those outcomes are articulated and once those core processes are articulated, then the question is, like, how would we look at these things? You know, what can we measure? What would you like to track and understand? So I'm going to leave the specifics of those programs for a moment, but again, questions you have, we can come back. So just by way of reporting, the following agencies used the consultation bank in FY19, and we want to keep reminding all the funded agencies that they can use this bank, and basically this is just any request that they have around evaluation, and we've had people consult with us about their logic models, about identifying, refining, articulating outcomes. We've had some people do that in anticipation of applying for funding and say, well, how would we even talk about this outcome? We haven't measured this before. What, you know, what can be measured? Identifying the measures themselves, creating or refining data collection tools, analyzing data. So we've worked to help agencies analyze their data, and I'm going to come back to this. And then ideally using data to inform program activities. So how do you make a link between what you learned and what you might change based on what you learned? And we did some targeted program follow-up. So these were our partners in FY 2017, these agencies here. And we did some work It varies, varied levels of intensity depending on the needs of the partner and what they were working on. So assisting with some data analysis, interpretation, and usage, doing some assistance too with data collection. And these were our targeted partners in 2018. And we also did some follow-up with each one of those depending on their needs and the amount of time they could invest. And this is something we want to keep doing because the key, right, to taking an evaluation capacity building approach is the idea that you're not just going to have one-shot external evaluator come in and go. The idea is that they're building something they can have over time. And, you know, there's a big difference between that initial planning work and then implementation, right? Just like program development, it's the same process. And so issues are going to arise. You may end up with more data than you know what to do with, you know. So we want to continue to work with our targeted partners in the coming year and have plans to do that, like we did last year, but with even more focus on data analysis and usage, and I'll say why in a moment. So one of the things that we did is that we do also want to self-evaluate. We're not talking about large numbers of partners yet here, but we do want to understand how people are experiencing the services that we're providing to them in terms of evaluation capacity building. So we did a brief survey this past year toward the end of the fiscal year of our 8 past targeted programs, and 5 of them responded. So we had a 63% response rate. So this is not based on all 8. It's based on 5. It's better than 0. We wish we had all 8. We're going to do another survey, actually, coming up sometime this fall with all of the Mental Health Board and hopefully Developmental Disability Board agencies, again, to take stock broadly about evaluation. That's something we're talking about with Mark and Lynn. And so this was also, by the way, anonymous. We wanted to make it anonymous with the best hope that if somebody thought, man, this wasn't helpful to me, they were going to let us know in the survey and we weren't going to know who said it. And so we chose to do this one anonymously. And we asked about the steps they've taken since our partnership with regard to their program activities, their data and outcomes. We asked about changes they've made, resources they've utilized from the Mental Health Board related to evaluation, further assistance they would like to see, and also their satisfaction with various aspects of working with us. And I just wanted to walk briefly through what we learned from this. And so we found that all 5 programs that responded said they used their measures and or the data collection procedures. 100% said they used the logic model. We were very delighted by that, that that was actually in play and utilized. 100% said they had updated or added to their logic model. So by adding new activities or new measurable shorter-term or longer-term outcomes, 100% said they looked at the data they collected, and 100% had reported on the data. So that was great, you know, that all were saying, like, yep, we're doing this. Those are great basics to have underway. And 80%, so at least one agency in each of these areas was saying, we have not done this yet. Use the measures and or data collection procedures that were developed to collect data on program activities or activity-related processes. And the difference here is that often our data collection is focused on particular outcomes, right? But you can also ask questions about how you do your work, and that wasn't something that everybody was doing yet. 80% had updated or added new measures, and 80% had used the data they collected to inform practice, which is great. But that's something, again, we would like to see 100%, and we don't know about the 3 agencies who didn't reply. And one of the things that we wanted to highlight here is, in response to the question, our program has made the following changes based on evaluation findings, only 1 indicated they added a new activity, none indicated that they removed an activity, only 1 said they made changes to a program activity, and 80% said they had made no changes to programmatic activities. Now, this in some ways is not surprising. We're talking about being a couple of years into an evaluation process. But if you think about that cycle of continuous quality improvement, I think we're kind of up here where there's data collection happening, the data's coming in, the data's being looked at, and as we move along that cycle, it's that utilization. Well, what does this actually mean for the program? How might we tweak our practice based on this feedback? In terms of utilization of the resources of this capacity building process, 40% of those agencies, so 2 of them, had used the consultation bank. We also were following up with them in formalized ways. They didn't have to use the consultation bank. But none of them had used the Measure Bank, and in some ways that makes sense because we had already developed measures with them. 80% had used a logic model workshop, and none of them said that they didn't use anything. But when we do the survey of the body as a whole, we're very curious, like how, you know, those we haven't worked with as targeted partners, are they using the Measure Bank at all? Is it totally underutilized? Do they even know that it's there? Do they know how to approach the consultation bank? You know, I think sometimes you don't know what you don't know. It's hard to formulate a question. And so we want to make sure that we have enough contact with the funded agencies through the through their meeting so that they are approaching us as they have questions. And what we found in terms of what these five agencies wanted more of was very predictably around data, data usage, and assistance with reports. And so this is something we knew from the contact we have with these agencies, but we really want to up our focus this year with the targeted partners around data utilization and corporation and that kind of CQI circle. So that's something. And this feels very developmentally appropriate, right? Because we've been in this for a couple years focusing on that front end of evaluation, and now we're kind of getting into the thick of usage. And so it feels kind of spot on to me in terms of where we are developmentally, and I feel excited about that. Oh, I circled this, but I apparently forgot to advance that slide. So, and people also, the folks who responded seem very satisfied with the process. So that thin line on the end that you can't see is a 7, and that indicates strong agreement. So our, the participants here said that we understood the nature of their efforts, that the evaluation plan was well aligned with the nature of their programming, that the evaluation plan is sustainable over time, takes a little dip back there. So there's still agreement, but this is, again, that issue we really want to be going back to, which is it's only when you actually try to implement that you realize, like, oh, my gosh, how are we going to do this? You know, where do we have the person power to actually implement this? Or we don't have access to spreadsheets or basic statistical analysis programming to be able to process these data, or it was more than we imagined, right? So we really want to focus on that with our targeted partners, both this year and our past targeted partners. And overall, they were satisfied with the partnership with the evaluation capacity building team. So this gave us a little window into feedback. We want to make sure that that we had some data beyond what we hear just verbally from our partners. So highly satisfied with the partnership and the evaluation plans we developed, utilized tools, collected data, updated models, and looked on and reported their data, and almost all had attended a workshop. But there's still room for growth around data, data usage, and reports. Most programs hadn't, like I said, made a change yet based on their activity. We want to work on sustainability, and we want a higher rate of response in our future surveys. So we actually just were discussing with Mark and Lynn maybe a way to incentivize participation in the next way and the next one that we're doing within our work to see if it would be appropriate. So that's kind of my overview of where we are, and I'm happy to take any questions. And Mark here and Chelsea are also happy if there's more detail that you want about any of the particular efforts.
Questions or comments?
First of all, I really enjoyed seeing how flexible you were to develop, programs that met the needs of very, very different agencies. I just had a question about, I didn't understand something about the methodology of the North Champaign County, the mm-hmm. Rantoul program. You developed a needs assessment tool and a survey. Mm-hmm. And then it said those were given to 10% of the clientele. And I couldn't tell from the description going forward whether the goal was going to be to expand that, because it said I couldn't see that there mm-hmm. was going to be an expansion of numbers. And then I have one more question based on that.
Yeah. No, why not Chelsea or Markira come and you have to talk into the mics. You have to come up here. It's a little bit, because it's also interesting. The question you pose makes me think also about this individualization, even the act of gathering data. And one of the things that's really unique, too, about the work that they're doing in that program is that they don't necessarily have private moments with every single person coming through the door, right? So even thinking logistically through, like, when does data get gathered? How does it get gathered? So I don't know if you want to respond to Aline's question. That would be, these guys are in the details.
Thanks for your question. The Resource Connection Program is going to, in the future, in the very near future, start to give the needs assessment on a more regular basis. So what they have, yes, they're going to expand it and start giving it out to, if not every person who walks into the door, every other person. So far what we've been doing is just kind of piloting it and seeing and trying to test for, like, how long does it take to complete these needs assessments? Because a lot of the times, since it is a walk-in service, sometimes the line gets long and they only have two people. And so if you have a new client who's walking in and they're already doing a separate process of, like, they're already answering a lot of questions. So to add the needs assessment onto that sometimes really is time intensive, and they have to respond in the moment to everyone who's there. So they've been piloting it to test that out and try to bypass kind of like the amount of time that it takes. But one of the solutions that we thought would be helpful too is to have some be able to both verbally ask the questions, you know, on a needs assessment, but also have paper copies in the waiting area so that people can also, like, fill that out while they wait to kind of reduce that. But the plan moving forward is to give it to mostly everybody.
Well, the last thing you said might answer my last question about it. I was wondering about if there would be a literacy issue. So if you were going to ask verbally, then that would perhaps take care of that. But I would still think you might have some people who just didn't want to admit that and want to get into it, you know. So.
Right. And you do bring up a good point. That was brought up before, especially given that we were going to just consider giving paper copies. So the paper copies would be for those who do opt in for the paper copies. We've also translated these documents, so they're also available in Spanish. So, you know, we're still kind of working on the issue of if someone is Spanish-speaking, but they are not literate, they don't have anyone in the office that speaks Spanish. So there's that kind of gap that's still missing, and that they were open to maybe looking into volunteers that are bilingual in the future to help with that. But most of the time will be given verbally.
Any other comments, Jane?
My question was just the literacy also, and I know it's a very bilingual community, and if we had crossed that bridge yet.
Yeah.
Any other comments? Julian?
So it's not a question, just a comment or a thought about it. Reading this, I was thinking, well, I hope we get to see some of the results of this in the applications that we get for future funding. Do you have any sense about that?
Yeah, I think that we've done some of that work with people who wisely, I think, they got in touch with the consultation bank before making their application and had us look at the sections on outcomes. So some beginning work, they weren't targeted partners, so a little bit more cursory. But I think that that's, when we talk about that issue of data usage and sort of really to talk about literacy, like that data literacy, you know, it's really, you know, it's not an intuitive process, right, when you have a spreadsheet full of numbers. And so we try to anticipate some of that in the initial partnership. But we want to up what we're doing in the middle with all of those agencies in advance of their reapplication so that we're really taking stock about how did their implementation go, what went well, what didn't, what data did they utilize, how did they utilize it, how is that reflected in their end-of-year reporting, how is it reflected in their reapplication. So I think it's a slow process because we're really working with so few places at once, which I think we have to by design because all of these partnerships are very intensive to get where we get to at the end of the year, but I think there's certainly a greater need. But that's hopefully what we'll focus in on, at least with our target partners.
I just want to thank you, and I have a lot of notes here, so I'm going to look at them as I say it. We appreciate your goal of sustainability and acknowledge how difficult it is for our agencies with limited staffing and also for you to work with those parameters. And I would like to encourage all of our agencies to utilize the consultation bank and to complete the survey for all the work you've done. I think that's important. And like Julian, we want to see the data.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. I failed to go through this slide, and I just want to say that I talked about the first two pieces, but I also want to say that we are available to meet with the Mental Health Board and the Developmental Disabilities Board around any evaluation questions or mandates that you have as well. We've talked over time about, you know, does the Mental Health Board want to do a logic modeling workshop at the level of the board, right? That could be done. And again, you may or may not have, you know, any interest in that whatsoever. I always get very excited about logic models, so I'm weird that way. But it's, again, something that if you all wanted to be engaging as well, that's something we always build in really at the, like at the pleasure of the board, right? So if that's something you want to do. And I wanted to say, and I didn't say earlier, that it was so great this year when folks presented, the agencies presented to the Mental Health Developmental Disabilities Agencies Council. I just thought they did such a fabulous job, and it just felt like forward growth, both in terms of the questions that the body that itself asked and also the presentations. And one of our goals, right, was to create a learning community, a learning community around evaluation. So evaluation's not like this. It's like, hey, we really want to look at ourselves and do the best work. And so part of doing the broader survey is also taking stock around people's attitudes and relationships to evaluation and sort of tap into the degree to which we are, affecting those culture changes around evaluation.
I want to thank you, and I like the idea of working with our board on the logic model, so thank you.
All right, thank you all.
And next on our agenda B is the family model planning process update. It's included in your packet. And Pat, would you like to say a few comments on it at the microphone? Thank you.
There. Not highly prepared to do a presentation with slides, but we just had our second meeting, so what's reflected in your packet is a pretty extensive minutes, because when you're in a process, planning process, you want to capture decisions and how they're made, and since we're trying to consensus build on the models, you can see how we got to where we got to, and then when we're at a model, you can see how we got there. So I don't know if the members have any questions. We have added a few components that I think some of you are aware of, a juvenile justice council, some other dynamics that is much more robust across the system, and with system of care being kind of the lens that we're looking at, that really is a piece that we're keeping on the table for discussion. And we do have two members of the board on that stakeholder committee, Margaret and Joe. So that's been very helpful to get those perspectives.
Any questions? Susan?
I'm glad that you've gotten started, because this is, you know, certainly an important issue and a gap in our community. I did have a couple of questions, and
sure,
they may be clarification. But on page 79, under questions, comments, and next steps, you noted that you agreed to develop a resource list of current services and interventions across the juvenile justice system. I was under the impression that we already had resource lists, and I just wanted to make sure that this wasn't a redundancy. Perhaps I'm wrong, and we don't have those resource lists, but
I'd be grateful to see whatever's out there if we do have something that's more specific. We're using the committee members on the stakeholders, which would be anywhere from the state's attorney's office to court services.
I just assume the Youth Assessment Center would have quite a bit of resources.
And we just met with them today, so Jonathan is one of the key people that is gathering it with us. So
okay, so you're in the process.
Yeah, I think it's looking at what other information other partners have and seeing whether the information we currently have, if there's something not
okay,
that if we're missing something.
You're not creating a new system of resources.
No.
Just filling in the gaps.
Seeing what's there so we know where the gaps are. Are there any duplications? For example, we do have a list of all family services in the community, and not just for the juvenile justice. So when you begin to look at other services, how can those be expanded to meet some of the other needs and meet some gaps?
One of the questions, and this is what Mike Williams is going to be looking at, is what other services are available at the juvenile detention center, for
right.
example.
Okay, good. And then I had just one other question, and that is you're still working through the process of identifying, what the program model might be. And
correct.
You've got several on the table, but it's too soon to choose.
We started with 12, went up to 13. We're at 4 right now.
Okay.
One of the dynamics that I hope I can do this, articulate this quickly, there's kind of a proprietary, evidence-based, the models that are over here that are quite costly, and that's part of what we've been doing is assessing PLL and some of the pros and cons of that particular model just from how it was delivered. And so that's some of the things that we're looking at. And probably the main thing that we have been asked to do, even by the stakeholders group the very first night, is come up with what Cunningham's able to do, articulate what you are able to present, what are the dynamics. And we just happened to start a program about a year and a quarter ago through DCFS that's an intensive in-home. And that group in particular has high strengths in family engagement. So instead of going through Hope Springs, which we originally thought when we brought this forward, we now have an area in the agency that we think would really meet that need. And that's what we heard consistently across all stakeholders is that family engagement component. So we're being informed along the way to come up with where the models are coming to play. And then the hexagon is a pretty robust tool. So you don't want to do 12 or 13. You want to pick the high ones that committee has identified. And right now we have 4 that we're going to dig deeper in by the next meeting. Sure.
Thank you, Pat.
Julian, did you have something?
Oh, Julian, sorry.
Thank you. Could you just say a few words about specifying at this point what you're thinking about who the target population is?
That discussion took place in the last meeting. We articulated 10 to 17-year-olds. Part of that, as you look, the PLL program was very specific to that population. For the Cunningham program that really this is designed for, we viewed as clinical. So clinical and for the higher-risk families and youth. But it doesn't mean that's why the juvenile justice piece became important, because we also don't want to miss opportunities for those families that might not reach that benchmark and begin to look at, as the committee talked about before, earlier interventions. But that doesn't mean that this is necessarily through this program. That's why we're looking at the services currently in play that we have in the juvenile justice system.
Okay. My only comment is to maybe somebody will think about it. Maybe you'll think about it. Maybe you've already thought about it. Sometimes I get worried about the over-identification of children or teenagers as problematic. Sometimes, people refer to this in the literature as the widening net. Some kids are better off if you don't bother them, or if you have very minimal interventions mm-hmm. that just sort of wake them up or wake up the family in some way. So I'm just looking for a way to know, to see where that's going to be demarcated so that we don't make the mistake of ending up inadvertently picking up kids that not so much that they wouldn't benefit, but that maybe it would actually be harmful for them to be identified. So I just wanted to have that as a consideration.
We had an interesting parallel conversation, I'm looking at Chandra, about defining even the behaviors as juvenile delinquency behaviors and what that does and how to view that through a 10-year-old is dramatically different and how damaging that could be. So that dialogue has already started, and I think we're aware that that's a dynamic to be very, very closely watching.
Yep. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Pat. I want to say thank you for just your comprehensive view of all the issues involved and helping to bring those together. Yep. So thanks. Next on the agenda, C, anti-stigma community event. There's a decision memorandum on the sponsorship of an anti-stigma film and concurrent anti-stigma activities at the 2020 Ebert Film Festival. It's in your board packet, page 83. I would like a motion first, and then we'll have discussion. Joe gave a motion to approve. Second, Julian. Discussion? I have a couple comments on this. So I just have concerns on the use of money this way, and the reason for my, and I know I've made comments before, but I've been thinking a lot about taking a look at today's world, and most exchanges for a lot of people are through social media, the YouTube, and I would like to think of us as thinking of a different way to utilize these funds, maybe have University of Illinois students through film scholarships do presentations that would be applicable for social media. For example, we talk about one of our objectives is preventing opioid abuse. We talk about bullying, homelessness, and just to think of it another way, and that most people now have mobile devices, and there's more mobile devices than computers, and we look at the film industry as it seems to be, I look at this as a, it's a narrow group of people who have the money to attend the event, and thinking about how we could reach, do anti-stigma activities and reach a larger number of people through student videos and social media. Susan?
As long as I've been on the board, we've had the pros and cons on Ebert Fest. So, I empathize with what you're saying, and my concern at this point is that we almost would need a proposal or a request for proposals for someone to develop an approach like that. It seems like a lot of work to add to the staff, for example, to say, could you come up with a relationship with the university through the media or other departments to create these perhaps more easily accessible venues. And I think it makes sense to consider it as a future issue. But I think given the intensity of the discussion that we had last year, and I was in the minority, not in the majority, it seemed pretty clear that there was quite a bit of community support and board support for Ebert Fest, and that until we actually have another option, given that it's going to happen in April and it's September, it seems too abrupt to suddenly say no. So I would just suggest that your proposal is one that's really well worth considering, but to consider it right now in lieu of Ebert Fest would be maybe more work than we're ready to bite off. But certainly for the future.
Thank you. Elaine?
We've been through this, and we did get the amount lowered quite a bit. I think we would have to consider what we would lose in kind of ancillary activities, too, because some of these films, the students have been brought in, or there have been programs at schools. And then there's the art exhibit, which I'm going to say something about when we get to board-to-board reports. And we don't have a film school at the U of I either. You know, we have cinema studies, but so you can't just go to the U of I and say, well, your students come up with something, you know. So I think it is would be really complicated to target social media and hard to maybe assess how much influence that has. And that's our worry, isn't it? How much influence are we having with this? So.
You want to keep entertaining comments on this?
Sure.
I mean, it's just maybe we will just rehash what Susan was referring to. I think the amount of money we're talking about here is relatively trivial. And the reward for it is actually, I think, exceeds by far. $11,000 is what it ended up costing us. I know it's 15, but we get some back. So it ends up being $11,000. And what we gain from it, beyond those ancillary things, which I think is not trivial, is also a place in the community. There's a lot of buzz about this, and a lot of people know about it, and people talk about it, and the mental health word gets known as an entity in a way, and therefore some of the programs that we support get talked about. And so I just think it would be short-sighted to simply, I think this event is an important community event in Champaign-Urbana. So being a part of something that's an important community event is not trivial. Which is not to say that exactly what you're suggesting, I think that's a great idea. I hope we could get more proposals for it. I think we need a lot of work dealing with stigma. I mean, we just have to listen to the politicians trying to blame people who are mentally ill for all the faults of the society, including gun violence, which now, you know, maybe we should run some anti-stigma education about the lack of relationship between mental illness and serious violence, because it's non-existent. It's people, but never mind. You know, the facts that I'm talking about. So there's plenty of education that needs to be done. So I think everything we can do in that regard is good for us to do. But the amount of money involved in this relative to the payoff seems so trivial to me. That's all I want to say.
Joe?
I always go back to my involvement with the Mental Health Board. I've known about the Mental Health Board for quite a few years, but however, I did not really get involved with the Mental Health Board till this became very personal. And when it became personal, I was asked to speak, and that was my realization that this reaches more than just the people watching the movies. It goes beyond that. It goes into families, and the conversation doesn't end at the Virginia Theater. When you take the videos, like the video with Shemeika Holzclaw to the schools, and we still have the video here, those things are impactful. We don't talk about mental health in the Black community very much. And some of the videos, the one with the violinist, can't remember the one with the music. The soloist talks about mental health in the Black community, talks about homelessness and how getting a home or an apartment makes a difference, not just about mental illness. And it starts to plant some seeds about what it is that we can do to make, to take the stigma away. Going back to what Julian was talking about, mental illness, the mentally ill are much more likely to hurt themselves than to hurt someone else. And as a community, if we use this video or this situation as a way to let our community know that there is opportunity to learn, opportunity for us to teach, an opportunity for us to have a conversation, then $15,000 is really nothing.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so as the new person, I have never had the opportunity to have this conversation. And so initially when I look at it, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's $15,000. And I also look at, it's kind of at a bad time of the day. I think this year the show is at like 2 p.m. I'm a working person, I couldn't go. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. So when we talk about, some PSA campaign type stuff, I'm like, that's how you hit our target audiences. So that's the stance I had when this conversation started. So then everybody added. And you know what? Now I'm like, okay, we're all right. I think it is. It's just and in essence of how big our annual budget is, this is pennies. And so I think we need to continue this. You know, Lynn and I have talked a little bit about, you know, what can we do to kind of hit some of the other demographics, some of the different ages. You know, again, I have a 14-year-old at home right now, and let me tell you, what she's watching on social media is breaking her heart. So if I could just have something pop up that says, you are amazing, you are special, and you're not alone. I mean, I say to my daughter constantly, you're never alone. And that's a scary thing when you're a mom, you know, because I don't want her to ever think she's alone. So I think we're all right. And so I think it's something that, you know, it does. I like the idea of how it's not just the people sitting in those theater seats. It goes on, and it opens up a conversation outside of there. So.
Okay, thank you. So we have the motion. Do we need to read it again? Okay, so we need to take a vote. So approved. Or do you go ahead and, okay, roll call.
Jill Omo-Osagie.
Yes.
Elaine Plincia.
Yes.
Julian Rappaport.
Yes.
Jane Sprandl.
Yes.
Susan Fowler.
Yes.
Margaret White.
Yes. Thank you for the discussion. All right, and next.
Margaret, before you go on, I just wanted to add that there was a student component added to that where they actually did different videos and productions about the films, and so they utilized students on campus. And it was through the Ebert Festival. So they actually got some students to do that. If that is something where we want to start telling them within those PSAs, but it also goes back to telling people to like the Ebert Fest page, to actually go on to the Anti-Stigma Alliance page, because all of those things are shared through those mediums. So just letting you know that there are things there. It's just encouraging us to get the word out and to get that traction. So tell our young people to like the Ebert Fest page, and letting them know, because there is messaging that's happening through those venues right now regarding anti-stigma work.
Okay, thank you. All right, next on the agenda, it's on page 84. It's the Mental Health Board 3-year plan with draft FY20 objectives. So it's 84 through 92. So the briefing memorandum prefaces the draft plan.
Yes, this is our annual 3-year plan review. There's staff has looked at this as a team. There's some minor revisions, additions proposed. Those are, in italics and underlined, and then strikeouts are proposed language to be removed. This is the first, the start of the process for the annual review of the document and updating and revisions. The board's input is very welcome, of course. It also will be circulated in the community, and then whatever feedback we get, staff will continue its internal review, consider the input we've received, and then bring back a final document in likely in November. So last year at this time we had a rather large needs assessment from a variety of sources, including a survey that the board had sponsored to get specific community input on the local issues, as well as pulling from other documentation. And that was, last year was the first year, the 3-year period.
I just had a point of clarification. The study session next week goes deeper into these issues, right? Some of these issues. Okay. Because I don't want to go deeply into all of these issues if we have a study session.
This could take a little while. This process of updating the objectives to the three-year plan usually takes a while because we want you all to contribute, but we also want to hear from stakeholders. So you'll see it again, but your input is really important. I found it very difficult to make a lot of changes because I felt like we took a big step forward last year, and we're just in the middle of the year that's covered by this. This is one of the things that is you're required to do by statute. So it's, you know, it might be not obvious to you right now, but maybe after those conversations about priorities, it will be.
Yes, this provides a broad framework, and then within that framework is the discussion of the allocation priorities, which actually is the primary focus of the work of the board. The planning function is important, as is the evaluation work. So the plan provides that framework, and then within it, we'll be talking about priorities at the two upcoming study sessions. And those priorities are reflected in the goals and objectives that are present in the plan. So if there are changes to priorities, then by extension, there would be changes to the plan. So.
Thank you, Mark. Julian?
I have a question about that, because maybe just using our present conversation, would I be right in thinking that the comment you were making about the use of social media for our goals in terms of dealing with stigma and public education could logically be incorporated more quite specifically into our goals and objectives? I mean, I think that if you're serious about wanting to pursue that maybe you can help us frame a way to include that suggestion in as we revise these objectives. I think it's generally in here, but it would only be in an implied way, whereas you were getting kind of specific about it. So I think it could be incorporated here in what I think is a goal 9, but yeah. So, but anyway, you get the point that I'm making here, is that I think that this is a good way to sort of start that process going about what you were concerned about.
Right. Thank you, Julian. So the next is, my allergies are so bad. Agency information, and do we have any participation? Anybody want to, agency participation? Okay. The next on the agenda is old business, and page 93, it's a decision memorandum. It's updated FY 2020. The Mental Health Board and SILA draft budgets are included in the packet, and the DD board. So if you want to review that, and then we're going to, all right. Okay. So next on page 94, do I have a motion to approve the attached budget? Susan, do I have a second? Second, Elaine. Any comments, concerns? Okay. Stephanie, will you please? I'm assuming we need a roll call. Thank
right.
you.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
James Brandel?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Margaret White?
Yes.
Joel Mosage?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Stephanie. Next is the motion to approve the attached 2020 SILA fund budget. I have someone who wants to. Motion. Okay. Elaine. Second, Joe. And Stephanie, would you do roll call, please?
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
James Brandel?
Yes.
Susan Fowler?
Yes.
Joe Omoasage?
Yes.
Elaine Valencia?
Yes.
Margaret White?
Yes.
Mark, do you want to comment on that, please?
Yes, this is just to update the board on where things stood with, I guess, it's some amendments that were necessary to as part of the conclusion of the contracting process. We had as some of the several of our agencies, the programs that were funded, had staff vacancies. And so we had taken a little different approach this year to dealing with those staff vacancies and prorating the contract amount until the vacancies were filled. We had a couple of instances last year where a couple of contracts had long-standing vacancies. That did not prove to be the case this year. Vacancies do occur throughout the year. We have some programs that have vacancies right now, but for these specific programs, there was a specific special provision in the contracts that it was to be prorated and contract maximum to be adjusted based once the positions were filled, and we have done that. So.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks for always keeping us aware.
Yeah, we just, with the circumstance we've experienced last year, we, as a staff, we decided to propose a different approach, mm-hmm. and the board was agreeable to that.
Thank you. Next is page 103. It's our schedule, meeting schedules. And I'm sorry, 103 and 104. Next is the DD board information. Lynn, please.
The DD board met this morning, and they had some of the same business to do. They approved a revised DDB and a revised SILA budget. You know, same documents you have here. What else did they do? I feel like we had some microphone troubles, and that's all I can remember now. But there was a lot. Oh, there was a very interesting project that has come up year after year. Some board members really want to know if we can grant anything directly to individuals. And there are a lot of problems with doing that. And, you know, much bigger units of governments than us have been trying to figure out how to do that for years and years. So we created a little experiment. It's a mini grant. It's modeled after the CCAMR mini grant. They're a private group, so they can kind of do a lot. I ran it by a lawyer because we are much more restricted in what we can do, and we got the initial bugs out of it, but we may find other bugs. But it's a very small total amount of money. The process will be completed by December 18. It'd be great if we were writing checks for whatever people say they need and demonstrate that they need before the end of the year, but that doesn't really matter. Getting the review of these mini grant applications done and the processing of award letters and checks rolling before the end of the year is really important to us. And why it might be important to you is that if it works and we get more of the bugs out of it, you might want to consider something like we've talked a few times about a fund at Parkland for scholarships for people who have mental illnesses or substance use disorders. DD2, but they're not, those folks don't, there aren't a lot of programs that, you know, welcome them, sorry to say, but that's kind of the message that we were getting, like this might not be the right place for those folks, but we could do something. And then another one of you all has suggested, what about a scholarship for people who make a commitment to work in the social services? You know, you can't really hold somebody to that commitment, but paying for the beginning of that education is a start. So those kind of ideas, which we've talked about for a long time around the edges, might be more clear how to do something like that after, you know, after we see what they have. It's kind of exciting. So we spent a lot of time on that this morning, and we got it rolling later this morning. So that's the DDB update.
I'm going to ask Lynn to explain, because I was at the meeting It's just a different way to think about things. So would you explain what the mini grants are going to do?
We are requiring that it be an individual, be applying for something. Their family can absolutely write the application for them, as long as they say family. But DDB-funded services include, a majority of those services have been reporting on specific people and specific service activities for about 2 years. So we know who is not really getting very many services. So we counted 231 people who are eligible, they're enrolled, but they're not getting much, if anything, in the way of services. So we're targeting those people. And then there's an exception for some people who might have gotten one little bit of support from one of the other funded programs or two, but it really doesn't amount to much relief for the family or the individual. And I think that board members who were cooking this up, and Margaret is part of that, you know, had in mind a whole range of things, like something to help support self-employment, like a little business plan, and what you might still need to get that done. We don't know what's going to happen, and we will have a review committee. I think any special project that you all might develop would also need to have some kind of review committee with two board members and two staff and a community member to make sure that things can be done in time for the public meeting with decisions. So it hopefully it will benefit those families of people who are sitting at home and don't have much.
Thank you. And next, 11, the approval of the Mental Health Board minutes. This is page 107 to 110. Do I have a motion? Elaine, a second? Joe? We're looking at the list. Okay. All in favor? Aye. Okay, and next is the Executive Director's Report. 111 to 116. So if you want to do some of the highlights.
Well, I think just so you know, there are at least another 48 pages of this that did not make it into the board packet. Yes. My plan is to email that whenever I get it done. It's notes from sessions that I attended in July. A couple of those were really stunning presentations, and I'm just having a hard time summarizing because there was so much great content. So you'll get it eventually, but yeah.
Thank you, Lynn. Staff reports, the written staff reports are 117 to 131. Once again, I want to thank our staff for all that you do to make such an efficient, effective agency. And number 15, the financial report. And it is, sorry, I forgot board to board. I was jumping ahead. Board to board. Elaine?
This is not about a local board, but this is the only place in the agenda I can say this. I've shared this idea with Mark and Lynn, but this summer I was in Eastern Kentucky in opioid country. This was a town of 700 that at one point had 8 pharmacies. And so I was in the Artisan Center. I always go to it. This is not County Kentucky, where they have art for sale. And I came across a room that was dedicated to sales of a program called Culture for Recovery. It was a program from the Knott County Drug Court. It turns out that there you can go into a track for community service, or you can go into a track to learn art or a craft. So you can learn luthery to make dulcimers. There's a powerful tradition there, so that's not just silly. I mean, there's a wonderful studio for that. You can go into blacksmithing. You can learn to make knives and hatchets and whatever. You can go into art painting and so on. And the products of these people in drug court were for sale there. And so I tracked down an office, and the woman who ran it all was there, and she told me that nationally the retention rate for drug court is 33% to get all the way through the program. Their art track has a 77% retention rate. And so I'm just saying that the little bit we do, well, it's not that little, but Stephanie and Chandra both help with the art exhibits and the art sales. You know, it is not just a frill. And so I said to the woman, well, I see everything here but the writing arts. And she said, well, funny you should say that. She said, I am trained in creative writing, and I'm starting a poetry group next week. So anyway, it's this tiny town in a depressed coal area. It's right in the middle of opioid and meth, ground zero, has come up with this very interesting way of through the drug court, of teaching people. And on their Facebook page, they are just giving a full exhibit with reception to one of the painters who has become kind of a full-time artist through this. So I just wanted to tell you all about that. And if we ever have, we shouldn't back away from helping, you know, arts endeavors that help our people.
So do you have, is the Facebook page the, do you have?
It's the Artisan Center. I can
if
send that
send
to Lynn.
If you could send us the link, please.
And I've
that
got,
would be great.
I mean, I picked up a brochure and, you know, contact information and all that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other board-to-board reports? All right. Next, the financial report. It's 132 to 145. And action is requested. So do I have a motion to approve? Okay. Susan, do I have a second? Second, Julian. Any questions or comments? Okay, accepted. All in favor? Aye. Do we have, okay. Board announcements? Julian? Yes, go ahead.
Question about something that Mark mentions. I think it's Mark. Yeah. On page 124, the top paragraph about continuum of service providers to the homeless. My recollection is that we just funded a position, right, to coordinate those things. And I was trying to figure out how much I should worry about the two agencies chose not to submit renewal applications and so on, and I just wanted to get a little update on what that actually means and where things are with that.
Well, as that section goes on, there is what's known as the Notice of Funding Availability. It's an annual application process. It's through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. It funds a number of programs in Champaign County, throughout Champaign County, and it's about, I think, probably about $800,000 total that comes in, and so there's an annual application process as part of that, that there is an application that the continuum prepares, the overview and the needs, and then there are separate proposals contained within the application itself. They are for a number of different services, primarily permanent supportive permanent housing with supportive services. Two agencies. One was a new agency, or Courage Connection had gotten a new proposal last year, chose not to reapply. Rose Grants had a longstanding program, and for whatever reason, chose not to submit a renewal. In the absence of those two proposals, and to regional planning, and particularly Lisa's credit, they prepared an additional proposal along with several others that they were submitting for renewal to fill the gap or to propose to use those funds for a similar purpose, and so that Champaign County would not be submitting a proposal or a total number of requests less than what was received in prior year. So, yes, we did have two agencies that, for whatever reason, chose not to reapply, but the funds will not necessarily be lost due to not asking for the money that regional planning is proposing. A new proposal. It's permanent housing with supportive services for individuals. I think it's intended to pick up where Rose Grant's proposal would have been filling that need, but is not. And there's it serves five different potential people eligible for the program. Can have a physical disability, a mental illness, a substance use disorder, a developmental disability, and HIV/AIDS. Thank you. And this is in addition to a number of other proposals that provide that also provide similar services. So we do have, we had the potential for a gap existing, but regional planning stepped forward and prepared an additional proposal, a new proposal. So I don't know if I'm getting.
No, you're
I can't answer. I can't answer a question about why the two other agencies did not submit a proposal because I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. So what I understand, and I think I understood from what you said that. Yeah. There'll be applications submitted to cover that from regional planning. I guess what it did was raise for me the question that you don't know the answer to, because it seems to me this is a major importance in our community, and I'm troubled by a reduction in numbers of agents or agencies or people in a position to make such applications or to be concerned with these kinds of services. So if we're reducing the numbers of people or settings that think this is important, that's kind of a red flag to me about what our community needs to pay attention to. And I'm going to want to ask this question in particular, since I didn't really understand when we decided to fund it, what exactly the person who's going to be the coordinator of these kinds of services, how they're thinking about this. And maybe they'll help us all think about it, but I just don't want to let it float by as just because a couple agencies drop out. I'm nervous about the implications of that go way beyond the specific agencies or the specific dollars this year. So I hope we can keep this in mind when we discuss these services in the next time. So thanks for alerting us to it.
Yeah.
Thanks for your comments. It's a very important issue in these times. Go ahead.
That is a reason that
Thank you.
And
Mark?
The issue of the match is actually part of that section of my staff report, the second half of that particular paragraph, the plus care portion of the application statement.
Because you can get adding more vouchers for people with DD would really help, because those sometimes that just the medical care alone will help meet the match for the whole cohort. That happened 2 years. 2 years, the entire match was met by surgeries.
Lisa and I and the Cunningham Echo Program have also had some conversations about how the Mental Health Board funded Echo Program and its work providing case management can assist, and how Lisa's proposals, how they can work together and tie together for one to help provide the supports to people that they would be placing with the vouchers so that the match is met. That's another, so in addition to, I think Lynn's got an excellent idea, so that needs to be explored again too.
Thank you. Board announcements? Our meeting is adjourned, and thank you everyone. Oh, I should have said thanks first before I said adjourned. Have a great rest of the evening.